This is the Domestic Violence Awareness and Education Program, and I am your host, Donna Hawkes. And I've got some really good information here in just a few minutes on men who are working on ending violence against women. And there's a wonderful organization in Canada, and so I want to share that information with you. But first of all, what I'm going to do today is share the maze of injustice, the failure to protect Indigenous women from sexual violence in the USA. And this is a brochure, and we have talked about this maze of injustice report from Amnesty International many times because it has created such impact. And of course, we want to always recognize that all the people that have worked and made their life work, ending violence against Native women, ending violence against women, period. And we have, the South Dakota Coalition Against Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault here in South Dakota. We have 22 member programs, both Indian and non-Indian, and also recognize all the advocates in the people who work in the shelters, the domestic violence shelters across the state and across the country and in other countries as well, for your commitment and dedication to ending violence against women. So I'm going to be sharing information with you right now from the brochure. And this is a brochure that is available. And if you would like copies of it, you can certainly, I'll give you the Amnesty International contact information at the end of this. Sexual violence against women is not only a criminal or social issue, it is a human rights abuse. All women have the right to be safe and free from violence. American Indian and Alaska Native women experience much higher levels of sexual violence than other women in the U.S. And this is something that we reiterate all the time. More than one in three Native American or Alaska Native women will be raped at some point in their lives. Sexual violence against Indigenous women in the U.S. is widespread. In Amnesty International's report, Maze of Injustice, the Failure to Protect Indigenous Women from Sexual Violence in the USA documents this critical human rights problem. And sexual violence against Indigenous women is connected to the unresolved history of widespread and egregious human rights violation against Indigenous peoples in the U.S. Indigenous women were raped by settlers and soldiers in many infamous episodes, and I might add massacres, in the early history of the United States. Such attacks were not random or individual. They were tools of conquest and colonization. Della Brown, a 33-year-old Alaska Native woman, was raped, mutilated, and murdered. Her body was discovered in an abandoned shed in Anchorage in September of 2000. Her skull was so pulverized, the coroner compared her head to a bag of ice. Police believe a number of people walked through the shed, lighting matches in order to view her battered remains, but did not report the murder to the Anchorage police. To date, no one has been brought to justice for this crime. Federal laws and policies have dangerously undermined the ability and capacity of tribal governments, police, and courts to respond to crimes of sexual violence against Native American and Alaska Native women. Women who come forward to report sexual violence are caught in a maze of tribal, state, and federal law. The U.S. federal government has created a complex interrelation between these three jurisdictions that is confusing and often allows perpetrators to evade justice. Sometimes the confusion and the length of time it takes to decide whether tribal, state, or federal authorities have jurisdiction over a particular crime results in inadequate investigations or in a failure to respond at all. Law enforcement in Indian Country and Alaska Native villages is chronically underfunded, while lack of appropriate training in all police forces, federal, state, and tribal, also undermines survivors' right to justice. Survivors of sexual violence are not guaranteed access to adequate and timely sexual assault forensic exams, critical evidence in a prosecution, often due to the federal government's severe underfunding of the Indian Health Service, IHS. The federal government has interfered with the ability of tribal justice systems to respond to crimes of sexual violence by consistently underfunding these systems, limiting the custodial sentences tribal courts can impose for any one offense, including rape, to 1 year, and prohibiting tribal courts from trying non-Indian suspects. At the same time, the majority of rape cases on tribal lands that are referred to the federal courts are reportedly never brought to trial. The federal government must live up to its responsibility to assist tribal authorities and Indigenous women's organizations to stop violence against Native American and Alaska Native women. Treaties, the U.S. Constitution, and federal law affirm a unique political and legal relationship between tribal nations and the federal government. Federally recognized Indian tribes are sovereign under U.S. law and maintain government-to-government relationships with each other and the U.S. federal government. The federal government has a legal responsibility, a federal trust responsibility, to ensure protection of the rights and well-being of American Indian and Alaska Native peoples, and has recognized that this includes the responsibility to assist tribal governments in safeguarding the lives of Indian women. Indigenous women all over the USA are working with determination and hope for a future where their dignity and security are respected. Amnesty International is calling on the U.S. government to consult and collaborate with tribal authorities and Native American and Alaska Native women to take concrete and comprehensive measures to stop sexual violence against Indigenous women and ensure that survivors have access to justice and redress. And you can take action today to stop sexual violence against Native American women and Alaska women. Amnesty International is working to support actions being led by Indigenous women to end sexual violence and hold the perpetrators of such violence accountable. And to get involved, you can go to amnestyusa.org/maize and to take further action and to read Amnesty International's report, Maze of Injustice, The Failure to Protect Indigenous Women from Sexual Violence in the USA. Or you can also call Amnesty International at 202-544-0200. And so, of course, this report included the Standing Rock Reservation, and many women from the Standing Rock participated and came and told their stories. Were able to have the courage to do that, to come forward, to tell their stories, to share these things that happened to them in their own personal effort to end violence against Native women. And so we always want to say Nina Wobodetanka Hetcha to all of you, all of us who come forward and are willing and able to talk about possibly being a survivor yourself or having a family member who is a survivor of sexual assault, rape, domestic violence in any form. Now I want to share with you some great information that I just found on the internet. And first of all, there is a site I went to, and it was from the Family Prevention Program site. One of the things on there is information, and it's called Coaching Boys into Men. And of course, as women, we talk and do the presentations, do the education, look for those men who are willing to and have the ability to do the men's re-education programming for batterers. However, I also have the firm belief that men listen to men. And so I'm always saying, you know, we could talk till we're blue in the face as women, and men are still going to listen to men much better. And, of course, that in no way negates any of the work that women have done in this movement, because, of course, if we didn't do it, we wouldn't be where we are today with ending violence against women. And with bringing this to the forefront of people's lives, of people's reality, and it's been really women who have broken the silence, women who are survivors of domestic violence and of sexual violence, and women who are willing to work in this movement and speak out about these things. Also, we have, you know, we do have many men who work in this movement as well. Marlon Mousseau, many of you may know Marlon, and Marlon has been doing this work for, I'm sure it's been over 20 years. And Marlon, I call him brother, and I have deep respect for him and his courage and ability to speak out against domestic and sexual violence against women. So this, again, is called Coaching Boys into Men. And I'm going to read to you some of the things that they're asking men to do. And it's all relevant to any group of people. You know, whether you're white or Indian or black or Asian, it's all relative. So I'm just going to go ahead and read off some of the things that they're saying. What can you do? And of course, this is men, and this is directed to the male audience. The boys in your life need your time and energy. Your son, grandson, nephew, younger brother, the boys you teach, coach, and mentor all need you to help them grow into healthy young men. Boys are swamped with influences outside of the home, from friends, the neighborhood, television, the internet, music, the movies. Everything they see around them, they hear all kinds of messages about what it means to be a man, that they have to be tough and in control. There are numerous conflicting and some harmful messages being given to boys about what constitutes, quote, being a man in a relationship. Boys need your healthy advice on how to behave toward girls. Boys are watching how you and other men relate to women to figure out their own stance towards girls. So teach boys early, teach them often, that there is no place for violence in a relationship. And this is coming from Coaching Boys into Men. And so these are men talking to a male audience. Be a role model. Fathers, coaches, and any man who spends time with boys or teens will have the greatest impact when they walk the talk. They will learn what respect means by observing how you treat other people. So make respect a permanent way of dealing with people. When you're driving in traffic, talking with customer service reps, in restaurants with waiters, and with your family around the dinner table. He's watching what you say and do and takes his cues from you, both good and bad. Be aware of how you express your anger. Let him know how you define a healthy relationship, and always treat women and girls in a way that your son can admire. Teach often. Your job isn't done once you get the first talk out of the way. Help him work through problems in relationships as they arise. Let him know he can come back and talk to you again anytime. Use every opportunity to reinforce the message that violence has no place in a relationship. So that is from Coaching Boys Into Men, and that's a men's organization addressing men and how to, how you can teach your sons or nephews or your male relatives to be respectful of women. And then I came across the White Ribbon Campaign, and this looks so exciting, and it actually has been organized since the 90s. And the White Ribbon Campaign is the largest effort in the world to make of men working to end men's violence against women. It relies on volunteer support and financial contributions from individuals and organizations. They do have some staff now, but they're still relying very much on financial contributions. And in 1991, a handful of men in Canada decided they had a responsibility to urge men to speak out against violence against women. And they decided that wearing a white ribbon would be a symbol of men's opposition to men's violence against women. After only 6 weeks preparation, as many as 100,000 men across Canada wore a white ribbon. Many others were drawn into the discussion and debate on the issue of men's violence. And what does it mean to wear a white ribbon? These are their goals and their focus. Wearing a white ribbon is a personal pledge never to commit, condone, nor remain silent about violence against women. Each year, they urge men and boys to wear a ribbon for 1 or 2 weeks, starting on November 25th, which is coming up next week. November 25th is the International Day for the Eradication of Violence Against Women. And in Canada, they wear their ribbons until December 6th. Which is Canada's National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women. All right, Canada. They do, throughout the year, they encourage men to do education work at schools, workplaces, and communities, to support local women's groups, and to raise money for the international education efforts of the White Ribbon Campaign. They distribute education and action kits to schools and maintain a website, which I will give you the site in just a moment. And they speak out on issues of public policy during White Ribbon Days. They urge men and boys to wear the ribbon, including one on their coat, so the ribbon will be visible while they're outdoors. And in Nova Scotia, they encourage men to support the Purple Ribbon Campaign. And, of course, the Purple Ribbon Campaign is ending domestic violence against women. And by now, everyone's aware of what the Purple Ribbon is. And we just got done with October, which is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And communities all across the country have activities. And, you know, one of our activities was the Take Back the Night vigil and walk, and we were unable to walk due to weather. However, we still had close to 200 people participating at the gym in Wagner. Okay, the basic philosophy. They are concerned about all forms of violence. And again, we're talking about the White Ribbon Campaign. And their central focus is on men's violence against women. And a question is asked, does this mean that you think men are bad? And are you male bashers? And of course, that always comes up, and it's a term that's used whenever someone is working to end violence against women. And of course, you know, we're not male bashers. We are simply addressing the issues and looking at the dangers and, unfortunately, at times murders of women due to domestic violence. So their answer to these questions is that no, we don't think that men are naturally violent and don't think that men are bad. the majority of men are nonviolent. Researchers have discovered many past cultures with little or no violence. And we can look back at our own culture as Dakota, Lakota, Nakota people, and all indigenous people, for the most part, that, the society was so well maintained that violence of this kind was almost non-existent. And of course, when it did happen, then it was addressed immediately. We talked many times about that, that because it was addressed immediately and because it was addressed with severity, that perpetrators were severely dealt with, that the incidence of violence against women and sexual violence against women were rare. So, White Ribbon Campaign, they think that men have learned to express their anger or insecurity through violence. Men have come to believe that violence against a woman, child, or another man is an acceptable way to control another person. The problem does not stop with physical violence. There are forms of emotional violence, from sexist joking to sexual harassment at work to other domineering forms of behavior. By remaining silent about these things, we allow other men to poison our working and learning environments. The good news is that more and more men want to make a difference. Caring men are tired of the sexism that hurts the women around them. And they go on to say that they are not male bashers because they are men, working with men who care what happens in the lives of men. Reiterate that what I have been talking about here for the last couple minutes has been the White Ribbon Campaign. And this is out of Canada. However, I did visit with them about a half an hour ago. And even though in the U.S. there is not a White Ribbon Campaign established in any office, they do. There are many organizations who have done a White Ribbon Campaign of their own across the country. And, they said that perhaps the White Ribbon Campaign is an organization like no other. Not only does it include men from varying social and political perspectives, but it is an organization that has avoided becoming steeply hierarchical or bureaucratic. There are no kingpins. They want to keep their emphasis on the community, on the schools and workplaces where the White Ribbon Campaign will be built. This is something that certainly you can do yourself. You know, it only takes one person to start. Let's live by example, which we talked about the other day with Richard Milda. Good men's groups out there that are working to end violence against women. And so, again, I want to send a thank you to all those individual male relatives who are doing what they can do to end violence against women, and to the organizations developed by men who are working to end violence against women. And it looks like you can access the White Ribbon Campaign at White Ribbon, and that's spelled out, .ca. And they also have a toll-free number, and that is 1-800-328-2228. And again, that toll-free number for the White Ribbon Campaign, and this is men working against men's violence against women. Their toll-free number is 1-800-328-2228. And their website can be found at whiteribbon.ca. So I want to thank everybody for listening today. and hanging in there, seeing how it was just one person. I didn't interview anybody. The information that I share today, I'm happy to share with you. So thank you for listening. You have been listening to the Domestic Violence Awareness Education Program. I am your host, Donna Hawkes.